Greetings, and this is another episode of Newborn Libertarian, guys, and even though we dropped an episode on you guys last night, I hope you're not tired of us, because here we are again. It's me and Christian. This time around, we have another new guest, and our guest is, well, I'll let him introduce himself.
Hey, my name is Nate Thurston. I play guitar and sing in a band from Nashville called Darling Parade.
Ah, yes, and of course we met in the Jason Stapleton program private Facebook group, and how I ran across him is he posted a lovely picture of him and his band shooting some guns, and of course I had to jump in the Facebook group there and post some comments on there to make sure anybody who wasn't into the Second Amendment and liberty and freedom had to make sure everybody knew that I was quite all right with the Second Amendment there. So that is how I ran into Nate, and I'm excited that he's on the show, and I think you guys should be checking the band out. It's catchy music right there, and I'm a musician myself, so.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we lose a few fans every time we post something about the times that we go shooting. We get a lot of messages from people telling us that we shouldn't be, you know, we've got to be role models, and their kids are watching our page, and we don't need to be out there just flaunting our handguns and our ARs and talking about how fun it is to go out shooting all the time, and lose a few likes every time we post something like that. But I was glad you guys enjoyed it.
And
yeah, if there's nothing like we like more, it's a martyr fighting a good fight, losing fans. That's what we like to see.
Well, I mean, I guess if they're going to dislike us because we enjoy shooting guns, we didn't really want to have them in the first place. So.
You know, in the to quote a great movie, they hate us because they ain't us.
Great, just a great movie. Hate us because they ain't us.
And Nate, just as we do with everybody, if you can give us a background of where you've come from politically, your beginning story, your origin story, and your political background.
Yeah, pretty similar to what you hear from everyone who's at the point I am right now. I used to have a big old George W. Bush bumper sticker on my car. I had that W on the back of my car. Something about watching the war start on the news just excited me at that time. I just America and guns and freedom. And it was awesome. So I came from that standpoint all the way till one day I think I was just messing around on YouTube, and just a random video from this guy named Ron Paul just creeped in there, and started watching a couple things. And probably like a day later, after just big YouTube binge, decided that everything that I thought was a lie, and ultimately led me to, you know, becoming a pretty diehard libertarian. I'm actually getting the Liberty Torch tattooed on my arm on Friday. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt this morning, I was sitting there waiting for the bus. I was thinking, you know, I need to get some new ink. And I was actually thinking about, I need to get something libertarian themed. So I'm feeling you there. We have so much in common. I play guitar too, man. You know, this podcast, nice. I feel, is going to be a lot of straight bro love or cis bro cis. I don't know where the heck that was going, so we're gonna just drop that theme right there. But
I'm sorry, yeah, I don't have any tattoos at all, which is just wrong. I've been in a touring band for several years now, and I feel out of place every time I'm up there on stage, and I've never been able to decide on something that I always said it would need to be something that I would care about and never get sick of. So what better to care about than some liberty right there on your arm?
Well, I've got MMA Junkie on my arm, so I better not get tired of mixed martial arts or I'm screwed.
And so, you're probably pretty safe there.
Yeah.
You'll be all right.
And then people who don't understand what MMA is, they just think it's weird. They're like, you know what? If you just got an I in front of MMA, it would just be I'm a junkie. And I was like, that's brilliant. Maybe I should get an I there.
There.
And I was like, oh, it's okay. You know, I only work IT for a medical school, so.
Well, that'll go over real well.
Yeah, well, they love me here. I fix their stuff. They know me.
Nice. You're important. You know people.
I know the people. I know the people. So, we should probably jump into our topic. What do we have first up on the list? You had some great topics we're going to talk about.
Nathan said that he is a musician, and Nathan is, you know, involved in the music industry, and he had some thoughts on the streaming of music, namely things like Spotify. So if he could kind of go ahead and explain your thoughts about, you know, what is Spotify, what's the streaming music kind of industry, what does it mean for the music industry, and what are some musicians saying about these kinds of services that you might have a different opinion on?
Well, I think that we're in a real unique generation here where we've gone from, you know, we remember having tapes to having CDs and Walkmans, and then whenever, you know, iTunes first started, having downloads, everything like that. And now we've switched into having streaming, and no one really owns any music anymore if you're subscribed to Spotify or iTunes Music. And it's kind of turned the whole music industry upside down, where no one's really buying albums anymore. And a lot of people have an issue with that. I think that it's kind of the free market working. It might not be amazing for all the musicians, because people have started to decide that music is maybe not worth as much to them anymore as it used to be. But the more it became available with the internet, the cheaper the price has gotten, because there is so much music available to everyone. And I think that things like streaming with Spotify, where you can pay $10 a month and pretty much have every song that you want at any time, I actually think that those things are good for the musicians who are just starting out, because you only get paid half a cent per play. It's not a whole lot. It takes a lot of plays for that to add up to anything. We were doing well on iTunes for a while, and then Spotify started getting really big. And now we make more money off of Spotify than we were ever making off of iTunes. And the reason for that, I think, is because we are still considered a smaller band, but people don't have to front that dollar or that $1.29 or that $10 to listen to our music anymore. They can go on there and go on Spotify, Apple Music, and click on it, decide if they like us. Maybe if they do like us, they're going to go like our Facebook page. They're going to become a fan. They're going to buy our merchandise. They're going to come to our shows. I think that this actually works out a lot better for the people who are just starting out on the bottom, having cheaper prices for everything, and is actually helping a lot of people get recognition that they wouldn't have in the past. Most people have an issue with that because you're only getting paid half a cent per play and you're not really selling a lot of albums anymore. But if that's the price that people have decided to set for it, then I guess that's what we have to go with. I don't know.
Yeah. I just kind of wonder about the music industry and, you know, how much money do these, you know, big time artists really make from their iTunes downloads or album sales, and how much money do they make from other appearances, whether, you know, like TV or commercials or putting on concerts or movies or doing all these other things. It seems like these well-established artists, you know, kind of, they put out more and more songs just to be relevant in the discussion today, but really that's not their main source of income. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is that kind of where it's coming from?
I think it is. I think it's becoming just content, a driver for all of the other ways that you have that you can make money. I mean, the record labels have really, as far as the artist standpoint, the record labels have been taking 85% of the money that comes in from your album sales anyway. So now you have a way that you can get your content out to even more people for a lower cost to them. And you have people that are going and making, you know, $1 million per show. Or maybe they're not selling as many albums, but they're filling up arenas. And that's where they're actually making their money, or they're going to make, you know, $2 million on merchandise at that show. And I think if people realize that this is just becoming more of a content-driven industry towards other ways of making money, we can all see it as a pretty good thing for artists.
So what is your stance on kind of, you know, pirating music? You know, you go to a torrent website, maybe someone rips the song and puts it up on YouTube, and then someone else rips it and puts it on the MP3. Not that any of us have ever done that. What would you think if suddenly millions of people started pirating your music, you're recording it and just putting it on an MP3 file and listening to it through their iPhone?
We have had that happen before. We've had songs that have had, you know, tens and tens to hundreds of thousands of downloads, and that's because we put it on the pirating site so they could get it. And what that did was that actually drove our internet traffic towards all of our other pages. I don't think that it's right to be able to get someone's product for free. It is your, you know, it was our choice to put it, to upload our music to a downloading site. Getting things for free from people, generally probably not a good idea, especially if that artist, you know, doesn't want you to have it for free, then obviously it's their product. I do consider that, if it is without their permission, I consider that theft.
And here, because somewhere Kinsella is having a heart attack.
Well, I'm having a heart attack.
Well, what I'll say is, for our very first album, we ran a Kickstarter campaign. We got a lot of help from our fans. We also had to save up a ton of money and put thousands of dollars. One song for us cost us in the thousands range to get it onto iTunes. From the time that we write it to the time that it's on iTunes, you've got to invest in the thousands for that one song. If you want it to sound really good and have great quality and be something that is potential for radio placements or TV placement. So for someone to just decide that I made a product, but they don't need to pay for it, even though I do have it for sale in several places, that I just don't see where, you know, I don't see where someone could argue that someone taking something that I made for free would ever be a good thing.
Well, here's the argument from the anti-intellectual property crowd is that, you know, a soundbite is not something tangible. When you put it on the internet and it goes out somewhere, or say you build a car, you know, you invested in this car and you built it up from the ground and this and that. If someone came into your garage and stole that's a tangible property theft. Whereas if you just, you know, put words out onto a piece of paper, where you put sound out into the environment, other people can take that from the environment because it's now part of the general, I guess, what would you call it? I guess there's only one way to call it. It's the general environment of the world. Now, maybe there's an argument to be made from your side if you protect and encrypt and do this and that. But if someone's going to play the music, say, and then have a recorder and record it from a speaker, it's part of the general environment. And it's kind of, I mean, like you said earlier, the people who are pirating all your music, you know, that drove a lot of people towards your, you know, more legitimate.
Yeah. Like, I'm still going to
say your Facebook page or this and that.
I'm still going to go to the concert. I mean, like, what are you going to do? Like, start chasing people down the road? Like, if they're like, the people that are walking by the car that, you know, accidentally hear the song, you're going to be like, hey, you did not pay to hear that 2 seconds as somebody drove by listening to it in the car. Like, it's just out there. It's in the air.
I understand that for sure. We've had people put YouTube videos with our music on them up, things like that. We've never gone after anyone like that. There's nothing really that can be done about this. You mentioned if someone were to record it from a speaker, and that would take away my only argument that I would have had is that there is a file that has the song on it, and that is even though you technically can't hold the file in your hand, it is something that does exist and is getting shared among everyone. And I guess if you were to transfer that onto another file, the same thing, then I don't have ownership of that anymore. And I understand where you're coming from on that standpoint. There's really nothing that is going to be done about this, that can be done about this. The technology exists, and it's always going to exist. It's never going to be uninvented. And I think that musicians are finding a way to cope with that, get around that, find ways to make money from people. You know, we have one video as a small band that jumped up to almost 500,000 views. And we were making, this was when we first started, but as a small band, we were making, you know, in the thousands a month from iTunes sales off of one person's YouTube video. They took our song and put it onto their own video. Hmm. And technically, I guess that's considered wrong by YouTube standards now. I think they take down things like that now if you don't own the content. But that person taking our song and putting it on that video led to us being able to pay our bills for like a year. So I can't really argue with people being able to use things like that. Like I said, the technology is there. We're not ever going to uninvent it. We just have to find other ways to make money, which is, I think, is what people are doing.
And I think
it's paradoxical, you'd think, because all the people who are, you know, to turn this into kind of a theory part of the discussion, people who are for intellectual property say, well, there'd be no innovation, there'd be no reason for new people to come in and make new things. But what you see is actually the opposite, kind of, you know, when you free up kind of this industry, whereas you said, you know, new artists on Spotify are getting a lot of hits. They're getting a lot more popular. And even people who may have deviously or ingenuously ripped your song and put it on their own thing, like you said, it led to people trying to find out, you know, who makes this song, because eventually those people are going to come back to you because they like your style, or not just that particular song, but they want more content from you. And it kind of flips around the other way than what conventional wisdom would or common sense would have people think.
It is. I think it's something that musicians are going to have to accept. The industry is going to have to accept it. The more exposure that you get, the more seats you're going to fill in an auditorium or in the stadium, the more t-shirts you're going to sell, the more likely you are to get some radio play, to get your songs on TV or getting commercials, things like that. And you're going to get paid for all those things. So if you accept that putting your music out there is a risk that you're taking and hoping that it's going to catch on, to go viral, for people to play it, I think it's still a good risk to take. I mean, we're still making money, and we know that people are going to be able to get our songs for basically nothing. So there's obviously a reason to keep doing it still.
It seems like the people who really don't like this are like the music producers and the record labels. They're the people that really have any kind of beef with it. But they're the people who benefit from, you know, the regulations and intellectual property rights, because they have sole control over these artists' property, and they will, you know, maybe they'll sacrifice their artists getting a little bit more exposure if it means that they have a lawsuit on their hands that they can win.
And they benefit from the licensing. All the labels all own publishing rights to all of these songs. And if the songs aren't getting played through the proper channels, then none of that money is going back to the labels, which I think we're heading towards a time when there's just not any labels left. We're already there. There's like three. And you really only get the big mega stars on the labels now. We've never had a label. We've been able to push ourselves to, I mean, some really great things. And I think it's really making bands realize that you're running a small business. You need to do this on your own, and you don't really need a label.
You actually just brought up what I was just going to point out. Like, I don't know if you did it, like, I'm revealing how old I am at 32. Like, I was a huge reader, an avid reader of alternative press back before, like, the emo bands and the screamo started to take over everything. Like, when record labels were still important, and just read that, like, every month coming out, and record labels were still important, and you would hear about that, and then after a while, you get all the stories of bands who would have all the falling out with labels. I mean, that's been going on for a long time, and now you, and then you would have sections where you'd see these bands doing all these DIY things, that do it yourself, and you thought they were the coolest people ever. It's like, oh my goodness, these few people just doing it on their own, making, you know, success on their own. Now you're starting to see a lot more people doing it, and you know, the people that you thought were like these rebels and pioneers, you're thinking, wait, these people were smart. They were getting on to something there. And I think that was a good thing, because you would just see too many bands falling apart, not just because of inner band drama, but because of labels and management and all that sort of thing. And, you know, not enough was going to the people who were putting in, and not saying that managers and record labels are not putting in the time before anybody emails us or says anything, you know, even though I like hate mail. About, you know, they're putting in time, but a lot of musicians were putting passion into it, because, you know, as a musician myself that, you know, was in bands but didn't do much, like a lot of touring, that you're putting all that passion in it, and then you put in the product and you wait for your label and your managers to do things, and you're just sitting there on the shelf forever, like, when are you guys going to say, are you going to promote it? You know, and they're just thinking, mm-hmm. No, and they have all these ideas of how they want to promote it, or this isn't catchy enough, or maybe I want to put this as the single, and you're just thinking, no, we're the ones who, you know, put the blood, sweat, and tears into this, and, you know, it's just, it's taking it out of the hands of these people, and, you know, like I said, with the regulations and all this stuff going on, it's finally just putting it in the hands of now, of the people who create it, and I think it's just wonderful with the technology and what bands are doing, and I'm glad to see that your band is doing that sort of thing. And yes, you know, with the internet and all of that, and people, you know, terrible people like me pirating shit. however, you know, what I liked about music is, even the fact, if I really love a band, I will actually go on Google Play. And even if I have like pirated versions, I will even go in there and I will buy it. And I'll definitely go to concerts. I'll buy merch at the concerts, because that's my favorite thing, is I'll go buy merch like crazy. I'll even buy vinyl if bands make vinyl, because that's still considered a classic. Like, me and my friends are nerds. We will buy vinyl like crazy. We won't even have a record player. I will buy a vinyl. I'll buy hoodies and all that, and I will promote bands. And I just think that's what people love, even though, you know, pirate the shit out of music all day long. But I'll buy merch, all that sort of stuff, and just put money into it, or, you know, all that sort of thing. And you start getting traffic different ways, and I just like that it allows band members now to be a lot closer to people in the band, and fans are closer to bands now without labels and managers in the mix.
Yeah, one thing I do want to say before we do move on, I don't want to come off as someone, I don't want to sound like we're hating on big business here.
No, not at
all. Like the record labels, because we do have to realize that, you know, a record label might put $1 million of their own money into someone who has never sold a song before, and might lose that entire amount of money. Oh. And so I do feel like I have to say, just so no one, you know, so I don't get any more hate mail than normal. It is still a big risk that they're taking on people. It is obviously up to the artists whether or not they want to read that contract, and it's something that they want to sign. I have friends that have had deals as big as what I was just talking about and ended up getting shelved, didn't make it anywhere because the labels, you know, got busy or just didn't want to mess with it. And you definitely, you sign that line, and they own you from that point on. And it's I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm hating on these big businessmen, because they're still fronting a lot of money towards all this stuff.
And sometimes it works out. Sometimes it works out. There are some gigantic bands out there that I do love that were successful. And, you know, some of those big companies and labels have been successful in put some of those bands in the spotlight, and I still love those bands. So it's not like every label out there is just some evil like system or something like that. You know, it's not all of them. We're not trying to say every single big label is terrible, 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 because there's some good music out there. It's just some people have been able to strike a different path, and sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. There are different avenues, we're saying.
Absolutely. Just a disclaimer there.
Yeah. Though you can send me hate mail all you want.
Yeah, so moving on then from the great discussion about the music industry, that's something that I don't know a whole lot about, so it's always interesting listening to people who have the firsthand experience and kind of the tools to know what it takes to succeed and actually, you know, like you said, like building, it's like building a small business. It's just your business is music. The rules are kind of different. The technology is kind of different. And the maybe the politics are a little bit different too, depending on, you know, who you have to get in connection with and the investment and the time and, you know, how something so out of the blue where one business would consider theft can lead to you learning how to, or being able to pay your bills for a whole year. That's just kind of, it's interesting to me.
It's something, it is a small business and people need to realize, like my band, we took out loans, a whole lot of loans to get started because we wanted to come out as professional as possible, looking and sounding like someone who was on the radio, who could be on TV, who could be everywhere at that time. And when you're taking out a loan to produce something that someone can get for free, it is very, very scary and very risky. We're still paying for that, but on our own, I mean, we've had, you know, a number one song for weeks on XM. We've been on several commercials. We've had all kinds of stuff, all because we took a big risk and went for it. And that's a lot more satisfying to me.
Yeah. So, Nate, you kind of had some thoughts about what the libertarian community as a whole kind of needs, whether through its messaging thing. This is something that Jason Stapleton tries to hit on a whole lot about the messaging problem, reaching the lost, and why you think that now is not the right time for a libertarian president. Just kind of go in with your thoughts on that, because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we all probably want almost the same end result. We could probably talk about what our idea of how this would actually run would look like. It's probably pretty similar. I don't think if we were to get somehow, you know, planets align and we have a libertarian president, I feel like it would go terribly for a lot of reasons. One, we're so far removed from what a libertarian government would look like that in a 4-year presidency, which is what I think it would end up being, or less, who knows. I think that you wouldn't be able to get enough done to show that it was the way that the government needs to be ran. I think it would look like someone going in there, you know, an anarchist just going in there, dismantling everything, all the systems fall apart, you know, Fox News and CNN spin it as a failed experiment. And from then on, if libertarians aren't considered the joke right now, I think that it's laughable anytime, you know, oh, you remember that time we had a libertarian president? Well, everything fell apart. We had a $4 trillion deficit. You know, it was, I feel like if we were to actually get one right now, it would be pretty terrible. For libertarians.
I think you're kind of right. And maybe that's the reason, because hearts and minds haven't changed enough one way, or they're still buying into the two-party system. Whereas perhaps, you know, when you look at it from a libertarian running for president, the best we ever had was Ron Paul twice. And what he was able to do was actually go out there and change hearts and minds. Now, he only, I guess, a maximum that he ever could have possibly had, like, 10% of the vote. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, if we were to transplant a libertarian into office today and him be president, you're right. Fox and CNN and MSNBC, they'd all be calling for their heads. Everyone would have a pet special interest that would be upset because they would stop getting government funding, whether it be Planned Parenthood, whether it be the military-industrial complex, you know, Wall Street, this and that. There'd be a lot of people out for your head. And if they didn't dig up some dirt about your past to impeach you or throw you in jail because you represent such a tangible threat to them, there's no way you'd win another election. So what do you think about the whole strategies where the political sphere isn't necessarily for, you know, libertarians to go out and win?
Wait.
Like, you know, Jason says Austin Peterson's really not trying to go out and win, but just to go out there and spread the message and actually build up support for this so that when
Wait
the
a minute,
time
before
is
we move on there, I wanted to add something before we move on to that. Now, if we were to say we don't want Libertarian president right now because they'd be like inheriting this huge like debt and like where we're at right now. But if that's the case, where would you even see us even being able to step in? Like, what path would that be at? Like, where? I mean, it's like it wasn't like Obama stepped into like we had some sort of semi-decent economy and all of that before, you know, like where are we going to have this nice point for a libertarian to step in that would make him somehow look good? Like, is it going to be after a conservative was in office and this is the time for him to step in, or somehow we didn't have a socialist president and they stepped in and things were slightly better? Like, when would be the opportunity for a libertarian to step in? Like, when
it's
would be the
it's
point?
It's not really... It's not really the government that they or the financial
or I mean just like yeah I mean like what would be the point? What would be the when is the best climate and atmosphere in general, not just the like economy wise, just the climate of the times would be the best time, like in general.
The people themselves have to be ready for it and wanting that change. And what I'm talking about is right now people aren't ready for that. Like Christian just said, you know, changing hearts and minds. If the Republican and Democrat nominees both drop out of the election and the Libertarian just wins, the people aren't ready for that. And I think before we do all this work trying to get a Libertarian president in there, we have to do work getting the country to be Libertarian. And that is more important to me, because once you change the minds of everyone in the country, it's not going to be that hard to get a Libertarian elected. And that's more what I think we need to be focused on. It's not the debt that they're inheriting, because that's only going to get worse. It's not, you know, the wars or anything. It's the people that the president would be inheriting that is the reason it would go over so terribly.
I think we'd have to end up in a disaster before they change their minds right about now.
That's what I think. There's an optimistic part of me and a pessimistic part of me that thinks that exactly what you're saying, Kim, is that, you know, if you look at South America and you look at Europe, you look at Greece, Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, these kind of countries, you know, at least in South America, they're finally realizing that, hey, these socialists and basically communist kind of leaning people, they're not what we want. And they kind of had to see the whole thing implode on itself before they realized, hey, you know, less Marx and more Mises. And they're finally having protests and stuff like this, and they want more freedom and they want capitalism and they want the businesses to come back into their country so that they can actually get some entrepreneurship and get some life back into the economy. And so I can't remember who said this, but they said, you know, maybe the best thing for libertarians to do is just to let everyone else have their way so they're finally vindicated in the end. And it's kind of hard to swallow that kind of medicine. But the reality of the situation is the other side has such a huge kind of proponent for it that, you know, that this isn't to say let's all go vote for Bernie Sanders so he can crash the country and we'll finally be right. This is to say, you know, you're not going to change certain people's hearts and minds, but you just have to keep spreading the message and keep saying it through thick and thin, because eventually you'll be right. And you need to be ready to pick up the torch and have a plan in place when things finally do hit rock bottom. And this is kind of doomsday-ish of me to say, and kind of, we don't hope for a huge collapse. You know, I'd like for everyone to wake up and change their minds tomorrow and realize, hey, we need to change some stuff. But unfortunately, with the special interests on all sides of the aisle, I think we're headed towards, it's going to get bad before it gets better, realistically speaking.
I agree that that is the place that it will most likely go. I don't, you know, obviously I hope it doesn't go that way, but I think we're going to have some type of huge, huge crash. I wouldn't say crash, but some type of almost apocalyptic thing happen to the country before people will realize that the way that we're going is wrong. What I'm worried about is, even if that does happen, what if it's still just spun in a way that, you know, it was the greedy capitalist that caused the downfall, you know?
We'll look at you more down in South America. They're done with that narrative. They don't have jobs.
They got a full, you know, socialist takeover. And if we head towards that and there is no more free market officially, which I mean, obviously we don't have free market right now, but there is no more capitalism, really, and it's all government controlled. I guess I can see that being the case. I'm just worried. I mean, look at the housing market collapse and all these things. You have all these things that were more than likely caused by government that is still, you got a movies came out and it's pretty much just enforcing the belief that it was greedy capitalists that caused all these problems. And what I'm worried about is we will have this huge crash and it's still just going to be somehow spun that we didn't have enough government control of everything. And that's why I'm still, obviously we're all still working towards not going all the way into that direction, even though I think we all agree that it will have to go there before people's minds change.
Okay. I played some serious Debbie Downer in that whole fiasco there. So sorry, Christian, I interrupted and threw in a tangent there. So now you can move on if you'd like.
Oh, that was, we like tangents. We like rabbit holes, and the deeper the rabbit hole, the better. But I think there's some optimism because in the wake of the 2008 crash, people were finally getting introduced to Austrian economics, and Tom Woods and Ron Paul was speaking the same thing. And, a lot of people were kind of led to the libertarian message from the right, from the or even from the left, from the strong anti-war kind of message. And that kind of led them into the economic side of things. But I feel like I kind of went backwards. This kind of the crash in 2008, because my family was connected into the mortgage industry and this, I wanted to know what went wrong. And actually looking into the economic side of things, what kind of led me to libertarianism. So I'm sure there's a lot more other people out there. And if you just look, the interest in libertarianism has gone up, slowly and steadily, but we're kind of chipping away at the status where it used to be we weren't ever mentioned in the right and the left media. Now they seem that they have to put us down all the time, and eventually they're going to have to attack our beliefs head on, and that's where we got them, because there are going to be some people who listen to someone going on Rachel Maddow and getting shut down and interrupted and yelled at and basically shouted their points down, and then they're going to realize, hey, maybe this person has a point. They'll research it, and then they'll finally come to the conclusion that we have. But that's the optimistic side of me.
That's what I'm hoping. And I think we were, we were lucky to have a Ron Paul out there that could get in a Republican debate and be in front of, millions of people, basically talking about a libertarian style of government. And he obviously has changed a lot of people's minds. I wish that, he could have just kept running for president every 4 years. But we need another Ron Paul type person that can be in there in front of tons of people, getting people like what you're saying to Google things afterwards and be like, well, what's this crazy guy talking about? And then after they're on YouTube like me for a whole day, and then maybe their whole world's flipped upside down. And I think that's the best we can hope for. We had, Ron almost potentially, he had a real shot at getting enough votes to get a nomination. And I think that if we keep having people like that go forward, it we can potentially at least turn this around a little bit. But I'm holding out for maybe not apocalyptic USA. It's kind of what I'm really hoping for, but it's probably just going to happen.
I don't think any of us really want that. So from your perspective, libertarians do have a messaging problem. We're kind of looked at as crazy kooks a lot of the time. And when we're not looked at as crazy kooks, we're just shouted down by the people who are crazy kooks. we see them all the time. So in your opinion, maybe in the political sphere or out of the political sphere, what are some things that we need to do to, increase our availability? I'm sure we all know about the debate that happened that Stapleton was so upset about in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. where someone was wearing sneakers. What are the things that we need to do to actually spread the message and to stop coming off as the kooks?
There's got to be, well, kind of what Jason was talking about, there's going to have to be some production value in some of this stuff to not look like this was just filmed with an iPhone in someone's basement, and to make it look like it's a real legitimate thing. There's an issue right now whenever I tell someone that I'm a libertarian or that I, you know, a couple of points, they just, they laugh it off like, oh, that's crazy. You know, you, and it, what's funny is most people assume that libertarians are anarchists. Almost everyone assumes that. My girlfriend still assumes that, and I've talked to her about these things a million times. She still said, well, how will we do this without a government? And I'm like, I didn't say that we weren't going to have a government, you know. And but there's a, there's an issue that somehow this has been turned around into libertarians want zero government whatsoever. And I think we have to do this a little, I was telling you before we started, kind of small steps at a time, I think are very important. And I so I don't know if someone just hearing a libertarian talk about this theoretical libertarian utopia, this all these Austrian economics and Mises and all these things, you probably lose them within 10 to 15 seconds of talking, because these are just things that normally go way over people's heads. It's so far removed from where we are as a country right now that most people, even if they agree with it, they don't think that it's ever going to be possible for us to be that type of country again. And that's why I think that as libertarians, we should be working towards getting ourselves closer to being a libertarian government. And then whenever we mention, hey, libertarian, people aren't like, oh, that's crazy. We'll never be there. Well, you know, if we've had, and I don't want to throw, I try not to throw out a bunch of candidates here, but, you know, if we had 10 Rand Paul presidents in a row that was limiting the government a little bit more each time, then maybe in, you know, 20, 30 years, it wouldn't be so crazy to say that we could have a libertarian president. And I actually think that that's what people need to be focusing on right now, is this idea that it's so crazy to think we'll ever have a libertarian president. Well, why don't we get it to where a libertarian president wouldn't be that much different from what we have right now? And I think that there are some some better ways to go about that.
I think so. A hit on it. You know, we need to be changing hearts and minds, not just minds. A lot of us like to think that we're so intellectually superior to everyone else. We try to come off, and you know, I come off as this way, I'm sure, as, you know, cold and just unemotional and this and that. But what Ron Paul really had success with is hitting people in the heart, you know, talking about the anti-war message. You know, we're not just about economics and Austrianism. We're about peace and tolerance and letting people live their own lives. And I mean, we're kind of neglecting the whole emotional part of the argument a lot of the times. You know, we have them on the intellectual high ground, and it's nice to make us seem smarter than what we really are, or make us other people think we're smarter than we really are. But we kind of neglect the emotional or the ethical high ground that we do have. I think you're right. I think we need to start changing hearts. We need to put a little bit of more emotional appeal, and we need to make it look like were people that you would want to hang out with, you know?
Well, I think, yeah, I was like, because I guess the typical libertarian thing, I think me and Christian and Chad yesterday in our post podcast talk, libertarians just have this issue when we discuss things, and of course, I know Nate, you probably, when we debate things with each other, if we have a disagreement, we want to debate it down to the point, to the fact, if one of us is wrong or think that one of us is wrong, we will debate it all the way down to the facts, to the point where, like, no, we want to get down to the fact. We will debate history and facts and detail. We will bust out the history book if we had to. We'll bust out the economics books. We're like, no, we're going to find it. And, you know, and we don't get angry about it. We're not trying to beat each other down and be insulting. We're like, no, we want to make sure we get the facts and the history. We want to know, because that's just how we are. Whereas to other people, it just seems like you're being super nitpicky and rude. And, you know, when you try to do that with anybody else, they're just like, oh, you know, you're just trying to act like you're better than everybody else. I'm like, no, I just really want to get to the truth. Don't you? And that's just the way we interact with each other. And we have to realize that's, you know, that's not how everybody is. And that's not how we should be approaching the message with everybody, because that's just not where they're at. And I think that's part of our messaging problem is that's just not where everybody's at, and we shouldn't be expecting them to just immediately be there.
Yeah, I mean, most people, I think when you talk about any of these economic strategies or theories, anything like that, their eyes are going to glaze over. You know, if they have a phone on them, they're going to be in a, they're going to be texting someone probably 20 seconds into the conversation because they've already given up on it, because this is, these are not things that most normal people think about every day. Most people accept what's put in front of them every day. And whenever you start to contradict that, they, you just kind of come off as crazy. I think libertarians can come off as very pretentious sometimes. I think it's a real put off for most people. I like what you're saying, Christian, about the emotional part of everything. I think we win whenever it comes to the whole war standpoint, because most people that you talk to agree that we don't need to be involved. We don't need 5,000 dead Americans in the last, you know, 12, 13 years. That hasn't done anyone any good. We probably don't need any dead Americans from all the times before that, reaching back pretty far back into our history. And I think that when you start to talk about that, when I talk about the fact that my brother is in the Marines, why do you want to send my brother overseas, and for what? And did any of the other people that we sent overseas, did they actually help anything, or has it gotten worse? And why do you potentially want to, why do you want to harm anyone in my family? Is this actually going to make the world better or worse? And I think that we can really start to win people over on that whenever they see that we're real people. We're not just encyclopedias of economic information.
I think so.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Steve Kerbel was just on Jason Stapleton's program, and I really liked something he said, and I put that clip all over the place. And he said, I didn't raise my kids to go and die in another country for another country. And I really liked how he put that. And then I was like, I'd never thought to put the message like that. That makes a lot of sense. I didn't raise my kids to go fight another country, to fight for another country, just to go die there. You know, that makes all the emotional sense. And I also have to put in context and think about, not too long ago, I was still in my progressive roots. And I have to remember, this is exactly how I thought. I thought with emotion, and, I guess you can't think with emotion. You're probably not thinking when you're emotional. So I have to think back to that and how I would react if somebody started to say, well, in the Constitution or something like that, I'd be like, I don't care. You know, that's not how I feel, you know, and I have to remember that sort of thing and try to think of what the Kim before I became a libertarian would think of these issues and try to appeal to who I was before I, you know, my eyes were open and I realized, you know, I should be thinking about these things more critically.
I think it's interesting that you brought up the anarchist side of things. You know, some people hear libertarian, they think anarchist, and then they throw, oh, you're just an anarchist. And a lot of libertarians who wouldn't consider themselves anarcho-capitalists kind of get a little bit perturbed. And then they go on the defensive about, you know, why they're not. And they kind of lose out in that way because they're kind of scared of the word. And I'm coming from the anarcho-capitalist side of things, too. And I can definitely see how anarchists kind of want the all or nothing, but a lot of them are so just, you know, contrary and sitting around because it's cool in their parents' basement, just, and they just want to find someone to argue with. Yeah, I like arguing as much as the next guy, but I actually want to, you know, get something done and do something about it. So it's funny, you know, because when people think of anarchists, they think of chaos, they think of the purge, and they think of, you know, kids with Molotov cocktails blowing up the windows.
Anarchy doesn't mean that either. That's not the original definition of anarchy. It's without government,
without rulers, without rules. But even Rothbard kind of figured this out, and he says, hey, maybe we shouldn't use the word anarchist. He said, maybe we should just call it nonarchy or something like that, because maybe, you know, we're not all anarchists, and that's okay. But an anarchist would say, you know, we don't need no rules at all, because I mean, obviously people need rules. People just should just be free to choose which rules they abide by and associate voluntarily. I think ANCAPs and minarchists and night watchmen people, we all need to come together and you know, get the elevator down to the 10th floor and get closer to freedom and then fight it out. And from that kind of thing. But I think there's, I think there's a lot of division too. Like some people just don't want that word associated with them because, you know, they know the kind of context that it plays in people's minds that they're trying to change. But, you know, maybe I come from the school of thought where if someone's going to throw that word at me, I'm going to wear it like a badge of pride and give them a chance to educate them if they really want to know. But yeah, I think even ANCAPs, you know, and maybe they're not even really ANCAPs. They just like to think that they're that so they can pretend like they're different and their life has meaning.
I don't have anything against that whatsoever. I find it just arguing over the minor details of what our theoretical perfect society is that we're not even remotely close to even heading towards whatsoever. I've always found that a little bit of a waste of my time if we're not actually working towards at least heading in that direction. And we're heading so far away from that direction that I can't even spend the time arguing the little minor details of how we're going to have this perfect society. I mean, I don't mean perfect. I'm just using the wrong words there, but you know what I mean? I think that we all have to focus on a common goal. You know, even anarchists can agree that a libertarian society is better than what we have right now. And so maybe the anarchists can agree to help get us to that point. And maybe, you know, I think as a libertarian that, you know, some of the presidential candidates, what their vision is way better than what we have right now. And maybe we can get it to that. And then we can work on getting it towards a libertarian society after that.
Yeah. I mean, there's anarchists just like, oh, well, you can't even vote or you're throwing everything around. It's like, shut up. Why not? You know, they said you have to change it from the outside. You can't just think you're going to change the empire from within. It's like, well, why not just try to do both of it and attack it on all fronts at the same time? You know, even Lysander Spooner, who was a anarchist guy, he was like, hey, you know, if you can vote in self-defense, then just, you know, vote in self-defense. You know, you might as well try to do something. And then, you know, I think a lot of libertarians get tripped up when a lot of people throw the word utopia or perfect society out at them. And, you know, something I like to do, I just kind of like to turn that argument back around and says, look, you're the one that wants to change everything and control people's lives. You have to show you have the burden of proof as to why your system makes us better than just leaving me alone in the first place. So I think it's important that, you know, libertarians, we realize that don't get tripped up on the perfect society type of thing. You know, turn it back on the statists and say, hey, you guys have to show why your reason is perfect than what would otherwise people's voluntary decisions be anyway. And that's not something that just anarchists can use. That's something that libertarians can use. Because in my run-in with, you know, statists and progressives, where's the libertarian society? Where has anyone ever tried your plans? And, you know, if you turn around and say, okay, give me one country that's collapsed because they had too much freedom, they can't find one. It's like, you know, they try to give the unicorn argument to you. You give them the flying Pegasus unicorn argument back at them. So
my favorite is like a free market, you know, that would never exist. I'm like, what do you think happened before government existed? It's called the free market.
Well, I mean, really the last 200-300 years has been states and governments and ruling entities relaxing their controls on their citizens' private property. And look what ensued. If you look at third world countries, they really have lack of freedom. But yeah, so which presidential candidates would you have in mind, Nate? And I think we're getting down on the podcast here, so we don't have time to to really nitpick like we would want to. But just give us some ideas, you know, some perspective on, you know, is there a candidate out there? And I guess Rand Paul would be one that is better than the status quo, you know. Who is out there that's actually, you know, we can trust that is actually preaching the message that we want?
I think that the only Republican that I would consider would be Rand Paul. I wouldn't consider Ted Cruz. I think that when it comes to the war standpoint, all of those things, he just loses me there. You know, skipped out on the audit the Fed thing, which we talked about a little earlier, not the end all be all, but The only Republican I would consider would be Rand Paul, because I think he gets us going in the right direction. I think that as far as liberty goes, he's probably a gain for liberty, more than likely. If he is not the nominee, then I'll vote for whoever the Libertarian is. I have not studied into the Libertarian candidates enough to know which one of those I would actually prefer. I listened to Jason's interview with Crabell, and it was, he seemed a little unsure about some of his standpoints, or maybe he just hadn't talked about them enough. And Austin Peterson, I think, would kind of come off as like the most pretentious libertarian, like off-putting guy.
I am a libertarian, and I'm
If I could imagine him just sitting in like a leather chair, smoking a pipe, and just talking about how much better he is than everyone, it would not surprise me whatsoever. I wouldn't be surprised if he does that at some point in time as a commercial, because that is how I view him, and that is how I think everyone else would view him also. So I don't see him as someone who has a chance of spreading the message whatsoever. If anything, I think he's going to hurt the message because of his attitude towards everyone. And I think he's actually going to hurt libertarians, because we already can't get the message out. And when you throw in this pretentious, you know, this guy who you can barely hold a conversation with without them being condescending towards you, I just don't think that's going to help the liberty movement whatsoever. So it sounds like I maybe made my mind up as far as Austin Peterson goes. I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's if it's not Rand Paul, then I'm gonna vote for whoever the Libertarian is, more than likely. So
can I take us on one more tangent real quick?
Yes.
So, of course, one of the big gripes, and I know, Christian, I know in one of our chats I went off on how I thought it was a minimal issue, but then it bugged me later, is his whole stance on the NAP, which, if since this is a newborn libertarian, maybe we should kind of tangent into that real quick, if you don't mind.
We can give a little teaser about it, but if we want to go in depth with the NAP
maybe we should save that.
Yeah, no, I think that could be a whole other episode.
Yes, maybe that should. Wait a minute, Nate. It's another episode. Are you saying you want to get back on the show?
I could have these conversations every day.
Oh. Nate, we would like to accept your own invitation to come.
Huh. Well,
thank you.
Well, I think that means, Nate, that we are going to have to talk about the non-aggression principle with you sometime soon.
And we'll have to bring let's do that one on a round table thing. We can, because yes. we had an episode with just you and me. We've had two new guests here. We can throw the two new guests in with any of our old guests who want to come back on. We'll kind of take a feeler if they all want to come on. That'd be kind of interesting.
That's just huge.
It'd be crowded, but it'd be fun, you know? Let's see if we can get an NAP thing kind of together, and then see where we go on that. Nate, tell the listeners where they can find your music.
You can go to facebook.com/darlingparade, or you can go to darlingparade.com, search it in the iTunes store, Spotify, YouTube, anything like that.
All right. And are we ready to wrap it up? Everyone had a good time today?
Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Loved it.
Alrighty, Kim?
Okay, guys. Well, that's 2 days in a row that you had some newborn libertarian. And you can email us at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com, on Twitter at Newborn Liberty, and search out the Facebook group. And you can just search out Newborn Libertarian and check us out on iTunes and rate us, give us 5 stars, hopefully, but leave us some comments. And until next time, we'll catch you later. And this has been your host, Kim, along with
Christian
and
Nate.
And thanks, guys. Go out, preach the good word of libertarianism, and remember to be kind and make sure that you're living free. Until next time.